Welcome to the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast with me, Sherry Honeycutt, Life Coach, where I have one mission with this podcast, and that is to help you get out of your velvet rut, to stop living by default and waiting to have the life you crave. This is a podcast where I help you take inspired action, step into the responsibility for your own happiness, and start every day figuring out what you can do to create the life you want, because it won't accidentally happen, my friends. So lean into today's content, make the intention to take away a nugget or two, and more importantly, decide that you're going to implement whatever you take away from here today, because it's on you, baby. It's on you to create that life that you want, and I know you can do it. So let's go. Hey there, have I got a treat for you? I'm super excited that the next few episodes of the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast are a series of conversations that I had with amazing people several years back. In fact, most of them were recorded in the throes of the pandemic. But don't worry, they are full of gems of wisdom that really are evergreen, and I can't wait for you to hear them. So join me on a trip down memory lane over the next few episodes of my podcast, where you will benefit from these never before heard, too good to miss recordings that I've had stashed away. And trust me, they're packed with juicy insights that I hope you will enjoy as much as we enjoyed recording them. And remember, it's never too late to start designing your life on purpose. All right. I'm so excited today. We're getting ready to meet one of my good friends. It seems I'm always inviting my friends on the podcast. I do invite my friends on the podcast, but in this case, I have a really good reason to do so. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Sherry. How you doing?
Good. This is Reverend Stephen D. Martin. He's Steve to me. And let me give you a little bit about background about Steve. I know him through my husband. He's a music person. They used to play in bands together. So I've known him socially first. But then as I started to get to really know Steve, he's a powerful man. He's got lots of stories and lots of expertise. Let me tell you a little bit about that. First of all, he served in the United Methodist Church for a pastor for 20 years, for a long time. He's got this interesting sort of connection between theology and then how that intersects with politics, and then how that and then he puts that out in media production. So he has this rich history of creating films for public television. He's writing, which has appeared in a lot of wonderful places like the Washington Post, the USA Today. He's a sought-after speaker. He was the director of communications and development for the National Council of Churches. So he has this unique intersection between, like I said before, politics and theology and being a human on this planet. And he's just pretty cool. So that's my introduction of Steve so far. So good does it sound? Am I doing it right?
That's too much.
It's too much. Okay.
It's way too much.
He threw the bullshit flag on the play, but it's
that's
all
right.
True.
Yeah.
It's all true. But all the stuff I just told you is not really why I invited Steve on the podcast. The reason I invited Steve on the podcast is because I consider Steve to be a thought leader. And
ooh.
I mean that. Oh, yeah. And yeah, I do. And meaning that Steve thinks lots of thinks. He has lots of thoughts.
I'm cracking up.
No, he does. He's a deep thinker. And every time I have a conversation with Steve, I leave feeling like I've really learned something, and I've also left with a couple new questions. And that's what I think a good thought leader is.
So you set the bar really high, and I don't know how I'm going to live up to it. So why don't we just close this interview out right now and call it a day, huh?
Maybe that's a good plan. Nope. You're not getting off the hook. You're not getting off the hook that way. So, and then the second reason, not only is Steve a thought leader, but also Steve has taken a fairly non-traditional career path for a minister. And so, you know, this podcast is all about living on purpose. And one of the biggest things that we discover as we're going along with our life is sometimes we hit a place where we're like, I'm not really sure that I'm doing what I want to be doing. So I don't know if that's where our conversation will go, but that's one of my ulterior motives, is to introduce you to more people, and then let's just see where our conversation goes. How's that sound?
Heck yeah. Let's do it.
Heck yeah. Let's do it. So do you want to start where I just ended, a little bit about your path where you are now or maybe where you've come from?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. You ask it in a way that's really, you know how people will ask you a question and you have kind of your rote answer that you fly out there and, you know, you've practiced it a bunch of times and you ask it in such a way that I can't really do that. So it's making me think about it a little bit. Being a pastor, being, you know, when you feel called to ministry, you tend to, you have this kind of feeling that doesn't have a voice to it yet. It's not articulated. Mm. It's not like you hear this booming voice. Oh, Steve, you should be. And, you know, you don't have this clearly articulated pathway laid out for you, but everybody around you tries to give it to you. Right. So they say, you're feeling this feeling, this is what this is. And people are quick to kind of guide you into a certain career path that may fit and it may not. Mm-hmm. I did feel that call and I did pursue that career path because everybody around me told me, that's what you do. And it didn't fit. I did a great job of it. I really enjoyed it. I really made it, you know, what it needed to be. But there was eventually I talk about my soul being torn apart. How's that for dramatic? Gosh, you know,
I wish I had music.
That's yeah. How's that for? No, I would preach this lifestyle on Sunday morning that I was completely unwilling to live. And here's what I mean by that. Mm-hmm. I recognize that, you know, when I'd preach, I would always kind of drift back to the Gospels because Jesus is the dude, and I like. You know, mm-hmm. I like talking about him and thinking about him. And I recognized that Jesus lived a certain way that I was completely unwilling to live. And so I was talking to people and telling them how to, you know, live according to Jesus' way when everything in my life was not about that. And really kind of all, it's not around morality questions or things like that. It's down to, you know, when Jesus was asked, hey, can I follow? I'd like to come follow you. His answer in one instance was, foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. So in other words, okay, you can come follow me, but you better know what you're getting into. And it's not a cushy, comfortable lifestyle with the Toyota Sienna minivan and the big house and all that. It's something very different.
Right.
And that's just a really short version of a very long story where I just felt like I was more and more living at odds with the thing that was calling me out of myself. Right.
Gotcha.
So my brother had taken a turn in the 80s where he decided not to work for the man anymore. He wasn't going to work for a big company. He realized that big companies, you know, they take your hard work and your innovation, and then they, you know, they bottle it, mark it up, and sell it and make more money than you do off of your hard work. He's like, I'm not going to do that anymore. And he went out to California and became a business owner, millionaire, and all that kind of good stuff. And that had always been intriguing to me. And I'm a tactile learner. I got to do it.
The entrepreneurial part?
Yeah, the entrepreneurial part. Yeah. You know, and I was just curious. Like, wow, I really loved it. That sounds like fun. I'd like to do that. And so, you know, again, a very long story being cut short. I just, when I really recognized that I needed to leave the pastoral ministry and strike out there and get and do something else. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that I was wanting to go sell cars. It's that I felt like I had, that there was a much, much, much more expansive life, that was out there waiting for me. And I didn't know if I had it in me or not. But I wanted to try.
Right.
So based on my brother's experience, you know, and just understanding that the only way you really move ahead in this world is just, you just kind of grab it and go there,
right.
You know?
Right.
And I did, and it was terrifying.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. There are so many nuggets out of what you just said. If I can, I want to circle around to some of those.
No, you can't.
I can't do it. No. Okay. Podcast over. So a couple of things that you said here, and there was this part of you, and I just got this image of this like pilot light that is in some of our hearts and in our bodies, that there's this pilot light that burns for, I don't know if it burns for everybody, but it burns for some who kind of feel that there's this thing that they want to create. And I mean, and that's what the vision I saw as you were speaking, and that this part of you, and I do believe this is true for all humans, that we all want to create something. Right. Yeah. We're creators, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so when we sometimes end up following a path laid out before us that we didn't have to create, you know, we're just, you know, going down the numbers, it's can be unfulfilling, right? Is that kind of what happened?
Well,
for you?
Right. Again, looking at things theologically, mm-hmm. institutions are always broken. They're always broken. So, mm-hmm. There's no good institution out there. They're all, you know, a mixture of good and
sure.
and not good, and sometimes downright evil. And the church is a, you know,
no exception,
not,
right?
Yeah, and it's no exception. And mm-hmm. And it wasn't really that I just felt like it was all going wrong. It's just that I felt like, well, this is a bottle that can't contain me.
Right.
I'm really not this Jesus-y in my normal ways of conversation, but it's that whole, you know, image of new wine and old wineskins. It just mm-hmm. it wasn't working. It was
right.
bursting, you know. And so I had to get in and one more biblical concept and idea, it's, you know, Abram's wandering around out there in the desert. Mm-hmm. He's doing good. He's got all of his animals and his kids around him, and everything's good. And he hears God say, you know, leave all that and go mm-hmm. leave the land of your fathers and go where I call you. And he doesn't say, God doesn't tell him where he's going.
Right.
He just says, go and follow
just
me,
go.
You know, just
exactly.
leave, go. And so you don't know where you're going.
Right.
You don't know what it's going to end up being. You just know you can't stay where you were. And that's really kind of where I was at that time.
I love that you've put it that way, Steve, because I know from my own clients, I know this from my own life, and I'm beginning to believe this is how it happens for those who they just have this knowing, you know, or this discomfort. Like sometimes I talk about the rock in your shoe. There's just a discomfort that it gets so bad you have to stop and say, this isn't working for me.
Yeah.
And then it takes courage, right? Because you're right, it's scary as hell.
Well, I mean, and just to talk about how scary it was, the day that I left my office at my last pastor's job, you know, I had all my books in boxes on, mm-hmm. on a dolly. I wheel it out the door and the door closed behind me and I heard the sound of it. And I literally just was, holy
yeah.
shit. What have I done?
Yeah.
What have I done?
Yeah.
And it was probably 3 months before mm-hmm. I started to settle back down and go, all
yeah.
right, you know, I haven't
yeah.
made a mistake here. I think
right.
this is going to work. And it was really, really tough.
Yeah.
I wanted to go back because but I couldn't. The door was closed behind me and
closed.
I couldn't go back.
Literally,
yeah.
metaphorically. And
Absolutely.
And one of the things I don't think I really mentioned as clearly as I wanted to, but at the beginning of the introduction, is that when you did that, if I'm not mistaken, you created what your company's name is Lakeland Institute, and you have been evolving that into your own creation, right? Where you're
well,
serving
it
in a
it actually
way.
I'm what I'm referring to is back in 2006.
Oh,
and
when you
that
left
was yeah,
preaching.
When I left
gotcha.
Was when I left preaching was it was 2006 and that was I started something called Vital Visuals, which was about
okay.
kind of, you know, it was about another long story, but it was about filmmaking and, mm-hmm. and the possibilities okay. of documentary filmmaking to connect people and to help us understand bigger issues. So mm-hmm. that was the original vision. After that, I went to work for the National Council of Churches, and mm-hmm. then that finished up back last May or a year ago in May.
Gotcha.
And Lakeland's has been something I've been building since then. So,
gotcha. Okay. Sorry yeah. for that confusion.
Yeah, no.
But leaving that sort of predictable, you know, you'll always have a church, you stay, and then right. you're like left out and going, no, I'm going to go serve in another way. So go back to this just for a little bit, Steve. You know, we fast forwarded to the part where you knew you had to, that you wanted to change. What were some of the signs along the way that were uncomfortable or that really got you to be aware, hey, this isn't working for me? Do you know?
Well, the first thing was it was a much more positive thing. It started really in as far back in 1996 mm-hmm. when I did a refugee sponsorship in a church that I served up in Upper East Tennessee. And that was something that really broadened my mind about the ways we can really help change people's lives in churches. It was an unconventional kind of project. Mm-hmm. A lot of churches do it now, or when they can do it, when the law allows us to do it, when federal policy allows us to do it. But that was really the first big change, I think. And then in 1999, I think Adobe came out with software that would allow you to edit video on a desktop computer. And prior to that, it required this room full of tape decks and stuff, you know. And I'm a computer nerd and tinkerer, and I pitched to a group that I was working with, hey, I'd like to use this technology to make a documentary film, and I'm going to get it on PBS. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I said that, and they're like, cool, here's $10,000. And I said, because I'd never done it before.
Right.
And I talked a big, you know, it's, sure. I talked it up and I got the money. And then I was like, oh, shit, I have to go and I've got to do the work now, you know, and I didn't really know if I could. Well, that project ended up being a documentary called Muslims in Appalachia, uh-huh. and it went up to the satellite, the PBS satellite, which is an amazing story in and of itself, but it went to the satellite in August or in July, and then in August I saw that it had been played by 6 stations somewhere uh-huh. in the country, and I was like, oh my God, this is incredible.
Yeah.
And then in September, the following month, I don't know if you remember it, but there was this thing where like 19 guys flew a bunch of airplanes into some really tall buildings in the United States.
Yeah, might have heard about that, yeah.
Might have heard about that, 9/11. Mm-hmm. Well, from that point on, American Islam was front and center.
Sure.
And it went, in the next 6 months, it went to 45 stations and 70 million households.
Wow.
And I got to be part of the big conversation, right? So I don't mean this. I do take the work of the pastor who has 140 people in their church every Sunday morning, that is a precious gift. It is
Absolutely.
A precious, precious thing. And I don't mean this to demean, I don't say this to demean that at all. But I realized that, you know, that there was possibly a grander platform mm-hmm. out there. There may not be a greater platform, but there was at least a larger one.
Right, right.
And so in the months after that, it was a very heady time. I was, mm-hmm. you know, being called, I'd get these phone calls, hey, can you come speak at our convention? And I was, you know, flying all over speaking places. I had, you know, great big names in church leadership life. You know, they would see me and they'd want to sit at my table mm-hmm. at lunch.
Yeah.
And it was like this head snapping moment of, wow, there is a bigger platform
mm-hmm.
and you're kind of young, you're kind of in midlife situations and you're kind of thinking, well, maybe I could make a go of this. Mm-hmm. And, it took me a few years after that, I was still making films as while I was a pastor and everything, but then, there was a question behind that though.
I don't know, but I can't remember, but I'm digging your story. I mean, I'm learning stuff that I didn't know.
And that was the genesis of it. It was just, that was going on at the same time this other, the rock and the shoe experience,
sort of,
as you
soul,
say, was still going on. It was like, there's this platform that you have, this voice, mm-hmm, that you have, but now you're over here and you're feeling the possibility that's mm-hmm, there,
yeah,
but you're not willing to make the sacrifices,
right,
necessary to pursue that and live that out. And I've always been very, very curious about what I call the wilderness path, of Jesus. That's kind of the high wire walk without a vision in mind, but no visible means of support.
Exactly. Wow. So a couple of things I just want to circle around to. That this is not linear. This is sort of, mm-mm, oh, this thing comes up here. And what I do hear though is you're following your nudges. You were looking at what interested you. You were being open. And then you're like, sure, I'll make a film.
Yeah.
So there was some risk taking involved. And I to my way of thinking, when stuff like that comes out of my mouth, when I've all of a sudden say I will do something before I even know how, that's God talking. This is my own personal belief. It's like, I said I would because it wasn't about me, And then so I'm also hearing that there was both joy and pain sort of at the same time. There was this time.
You betcha.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I'm people are listening to me. I'm part of the conversation, but I'm also not being fed in this area of my life. Right.
So, yeah, since then I've kind of figured out that you can never make a step forward without leaving something behind. So, there's always a, whenever you're making any kind of transition, there's something you're having to choose to leave behind.
Absolutely.
And that's the hard part. We human beings don't like leaving stuff behind.
No.
I don't like leaving stuff behind. You can look in my garage to see the very truth of that. Yeah.
Yeah. We're literally and metaphorically hoarders, aren't we? We want things to change, but we want them to stay the same. We want new experiences. We want to hold on to the old stuff. I think we think it keeps us safer because, what if I've changed my mind? However, when we leave something, maybe I even might say instead of leave it, we let it go. Or maybe we just go to the next place. It can be quite freeing too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Learned that with a summer in Berlin. You ready for this?
I'm ready. Okay. Hit it.
Well, just simply, I had once I launched into this wonderful entrepreneurial world, I was free to travel and free to do some, mm-hmm, adventurous things. And I talked a foundation into a project that involved me spending the summer in Berlin with my kids, with my family. And we traveled Europe the whole time. We did all kinds of great things, but part of what we learned, what I learned there for sure, was I've got a big family, six, mm-hmm, there's six of us. There were four, a wife and four kids, mm-hmm, little kids at the time. We needed a place to stay over there. And I was able to arrange for an apartment, which was, it was 2,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, this'll do because we need all this space for our kids. There's a lot of kids,
Right.
And we got over there and the place was lovely, but it was way too big. Why? Because it didn't have our stuff in it.
Right.
And the kids didn't need all that space.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't each need a bedroom.
Right.
They were fine being together. But what I realized was that, wow, I have the big house in the suburbs, not for me. It's for all that stuff I'm not willing to let go of.
Yes. Yes, I'm listening. George Carlin is speaking in my head about stuff. If you, all of a sudden I just heard George Carlin, right? We've got to have storage for our stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but, and so that's a whole nother journey there, you know, towards smaller, simpler living, but
yeah, and it's for those who do that. I'm attached to my stuff. I really, really am. But for those who have less of it, they're able to weave and bob through their life a little easier than those of us who, I tease everybody, I'm like, I've got enough stuff in my garage in case of a friend of a friend's kid's daughter needs to have a wedding catered, I'm good.
Yeah.
Why am I holding on to stuff? You know,
right.
But we
did. And I just realized, you know, it just quickly, I realized that I was living for that stuff instead of that stuff living for me.
Exactly. And exactly.
So it's still a long ongoing journey, but I'm trying to get rid of the stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to downsize continually, mm-hmm. You know, it'll probably be a project till I die.
I have these things I talk about, the seven tenets of living on purpose. And one of those is letting go of what you no longer need. And of course, that's a pretty simplistic statement, but it's a hard one. Like discerning, do I need it? Do I not need it? What is it? Does it?
Hey, Sherry, E equals MC squared is a pretty simple equation.
Right. But,
it has some pretty big ramifications, right?
Right. Smart ass. Yeah. By the way, when you hear that beep, I am not censoring Steve. Steve is censoring himself. He's got his own buzzer. I am not buzzing him. I would fine. So the other thing I want to go back to the story you said, you watched your brother do this.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes when we're trying to find our courage or we're trying to muster up whatever it is to tell ourselves to really admit we're not really happy where we are, we want to go somewhere else, we have to look and see evidence that it can be done, you know,
yeah.
Or at least I think that's a real help for us. You did that with your brother.
Yeah.
While it wasn't necessarily the ministry. And you know what, Steve, I have a feeling that ministers are now watching you craft a new life and a way to minister in a new way. What do you think about
that? I hope so. Mm-hmm. I hope so, because it's my contention that the old model's broken.
Yeah.
I'm a United Methodist. I'm a member of what we used to call the mainline churches.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but that model, that way of doing things is
not working.
Broken. It is done.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, the need for spirituality in society is probably at its greatest peak. And I actually got to pitch this idea to CBS, and they did the show. It was one of these little Sunday morning documentaries, but I asked them to, I said, you should look at the kind of decline in the mainline churches and the rising, you know, rising interest in spirituality. You should do an investigation of the proliferation of yoga studios in the cities, because that's where people are going instead
of church.
It's a religious practice, but it involves, you know, a commitment. It involves the whole body. Mm-hmm. It brings benefits, but it doesn't bring, you know, baggage, obligation, dogma, all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. You probably ought to pay attention to that. And that is one of my big kind of things, that we think this is becoming an irreligious culture, but it's not. It is a deeply spiritual culture that we just express our need for community, our need for spirituality, bonding, all these kinds of things in very different ways than we did in the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah.
And that's what we got to pay attention
to. Gosh, Steve, I love that so much, because it's been mislabeled, right? That people are not interested in sitting on a pew for 2 hours every Sunday morning. I mean, some are, you know, but it draws me back to your part of your story, that all of a sudden you were doing this thing that you were interested in. Follow me here, see if this makes sense. Mm-hmm. And before it was even invented, Adobe comes around and you get to start editing films at home, right?
Yeah.
So you had this niggling of this thing you wanted to do before some of the things were invented for you to do it, right? So now we're in this place where church is transforming or has the ability to transform. And we just have to go with it even before the answers of how it's going to make sense 5 years from now. May not even be evident now. Did that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. And I, you know, I was working with one church who were trying to plan their worship service times and stuff post COVID. Excuse me. And they kept coming back to, well, what you know, if we do something online, how does that bring people into the church? Like, what do you mean? Well, we want to bring them into the building so they can be one of us. You know, how do you get them to give money to the budget? You know, when they're online, it's like, is that what we're really supposed to be doing? Is just, you know, it's like once they're in the building, then we have done our job. You know, it's a totally misguided and inadequate view of what community life can look like in this new, you know, this Zoom based kind of era that we live in, you know, where we talk to our parents via FaceTime, you know, we connect with friends, you know, happy hour. We have Zoom happy hours, whether there's a pandemic locking us down or not.
Right.
You know, we have all these ways of relating to each other and extolling each other, you know, and lifting each other up that don't require a building. Don't require a building that was, by the way, built in 1958 and hasn't been updated since it was built. When you update your kitchen every 5 years, you know, we won't update our church buildings, and we wonder why young people don't really want to come in them.
Exactly.
You know? So it's my premise is basically that the essence of it is still good and beautiful, but the structure we have is completely broken. Mm-hmm. And we have an opportunity, thanks to COVID, we have an opportunity to totally, we learned some things in COVID, and we have an opportunity to imagine them, you know, to bring them out, to try, to make mistakes, to Elon Musk says, run around and break things or something. Mm-hmm. I don't
know.
Something like that.
And so what you just described so beautifully, that the church has the opportunity, I would go so far as to all of us have an opportunity in our own life. You know,
we've
been sitting
something?
On the couch, watching Netflix, you know, figuring out what's worked, what didn't work, you know, things that got removed that we don't really want to replace again, you know.
That just lost the connection.
Yeah. Are you back now? You're still frozen up on my end, but that's okay. Are you there now?
You're back, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. So I'll start that over.
Start that over.
I will.
Pretend that
I'll say
didn't
I want to take what you just said about the church and sort of overlay that very same sentiment on us as individuals and us as a culture at 50,000 feet and us as individuals, where we're going like, do I really want to add back what got removed? You know, we were much more judicious. We've also had a big spotlight, you know, lined up on us going, I don't know that I like that anymore. You know, so in that uncomfortable place, in our discomfort, we get to ask ourselves, you know, how can we do this differently? You know, in our lives, not just
the workplace is going through the workplace as an institution, you know, and everybody's wondering, well, why is it people don't want to go back to work right now? Why is there a job shortage? Well, you know, maybe it's because the government, support programs were too generous. Maybe, you know, maybe we're just incentivized to stay at home. And we don't want to work. But it could also be that, I'm not sure I want to work for $2.12 an hour at a restaurant anymore. There might be a better way to do that.
Yeah, and rely on somebody to tip me enough.
And it maybe I don't want to go. Gosh, I kind of liked. I live in suburban DC, right? And I used to. Get ready. I used to commute 3 hours every day.
Holy cow.
3 hours of my day Now, it was a good commute because I was on a train but and I could still relax and everything. But that was 3 hours that was neither work nor right. home.
Right.
And I think that is an, you know, the commute is an institution that we're all mm-hmm. questioning now, mm-hmm. you know, is that really a good use? And COVID and all of the pain that that brought us, it caused us to ask those questions.
Exactly.
And so there's at least 100 more ways to which now we have an opportunity, thanks to the experiences that we've had and what we've learned from ourselves, mm-hmm. we have an opportunity to learn from it, shape it, and live into it.
Absolutely. And what I would add to that is I don't want us to go too quickly to the answers. Let's make right. sure we're asking the right questions. Let's just keep asking questions. And before we jump to the answers, and we'd love to have the answers. We want it to be tied up in a neat bow, but let's let it evolve, right?
Well, I'm convinced I'm not smart enough to provide any answers.
Right.
I'm really not. And that's where I think it's another cool thing that's going on these days is that we can ask questions, and there's mm-hmm. always this. I mean, you remember when the internet became a thing, you mm-hmm. know, every little town had 15 little internet startups, you yep. know, before Comcast came in and bought up everything, right? Mm-hmm. Likewise, this is this wild time mm-hmm. where everybody's out there trying it and they're experimenting and there are just so many areas of life where it hasn't just gelled together and become mm-hmm. this thing. We're in that experimentation phase, and it's exciting.
It is exciting. And so that circles me back around to the very beginning of your story where you said you had this calling but you couldn't put words to it. And then others tried to tell you what it meant and to quickly put you into a formulaic way for that to be made present in your life. That's what we have to be really careful of trying not to do again. That as people say, you know, this isn't working for me, is allow folks to sit in that and fit instead of going, oh, well, I've got the right idea for you. You know, we may tend to do that pretty quickly if we're not careful.
And we also have to be very careful not to act out of anxiety. So mm-hmm. it's very difficult. It's you know, we don't do well in limbo. You know, we don't do well when we're wandering in the wilderness and we mm-hmm. don't really see where we're going. That's just human nature.
It's hard for us, right.
And so you have to be willing or able to stay in it. And a lot of people just aren't, you know,
right.
I think sometimes your circumstances are such that you just can't.
Right.
But if I thought I could, I jumped off the cliff and realized the minute I jumped off, ooh, shit. That's really, this is really uncomfortable. But what I did find out is I am quite certain that my life has been much bigger and much richer than it ever would have been if I had maintained
right.
the career path. And we're not talking about, you know, churches and
no, pastors.
And calling. It was the certain career path
right.
that was the road more traveled, shall mm-hmm. we say.
Right. It just wasn't
if
a
I
good
had,
fit.
Yeah. I just would not have been able to do that.
Right.
You know, my life would not be, I would not be where I am today if
right.
it were not for me taking some giant risks.
Yeah. I want to see if I can ask you a couple of questions that I'm asked a lot of folks on the podcast just to kind of have some kind of connection between these. So let's go to that question. What do you do now and what did you do in the past when you were in that limbo place to kind of stay okay while you're in a place of limbo? What advice do you have around that or what tips have worked for you?
So anytime you're starting up something new, there are periods of discouragement, you mm-hmm. know, and you're like, oh, this isn't going to work. I don't know why, you know, and you get really frustrated mm-hmm. and you're like,
yeah.
And thankfully, I've been in this long enough that I know from, it's not just kind of a pie in the sky thing. I know from experience, it will work out.
Right.
Something will happen tomorrow or next week. Something will drop in your lap that you weren't expecting. Mm-hmm. You don't know where it came from. it will, you will have what you need to get through, you know, this trial. You won't have more, you won't have less. You'll have exactly what you need to get you through, and then you'll be able to live another day.
Beautiful.
You know, and it's just not, it's not even something I really even think about anymore, other than just to say,
yeah,
you know, Steve, you've been through this before.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be fine. You know,
so there's kind of this, there's faith there.
There's faith. There's and also support from a very, very special person in my life who is ready to say, it's all going to be fine.
Yeah.
Don't worry. It's going to work out, you know, and that's something that I, you know, that I didn't always feel in my marriage. I didn't, it, there was, and to her credit, there was so much at stake, you know, four kids.
Right.
It's a big deal.
To stop, you know, what you're doing and go.
So yeah, that's a big deal. But, to have people around you who also believe in you and know that it's going to work out, I think that's really key to keeping going.
Amen, brother. Having those people around you who can buoy you when you're nervous, people who are going to remind you to take it one step at a time. We can't underscore that enough. How do you know when you're, and I call it in the flow, or really in the flow, or how do you know when you're, or maybe the other question is, how do you know when you're out of the flow? Talk about that for a minute.
My perception of the length of the day.
Oh,
right. So if I find myself, if I look up and go, oh, I can't believe it's only 10:30. You know, if I find myself, you know, watching the clock, then I know I'm out of it. I'm out of flow.
Gosh, that's
and
great.
If I find myself, looking up and going, wow, today's gone fast. I talked to these people and learned, you know, and that's, you know, that's when I know it.
That is a brilliant distinction. I'm nodding my head because I agree. When I can get immersed and not, and I'll tell you, when it starts through that I'm clock watching, I just get up, go do something else. Yeah, just get up and do something else. Do you have a part, do you have a routine or anything that keeps you sort of centered and grounded? Do you have a practice, a spiritual practice, a routine, anything that you want to speak to?
You know, I'm one of the most undisciplined people you'll ever meet, and Well, it's true, and I don't really have a regular practice that I do. I know I benefit from those things when I do them, but I'm not the kind of guy to have to do his morning devotionals and all of that. This is going to be really whack and I'll have to explain it. So 3 years ago I started riding a motorcycle. And there have been times where I needed to make some big decisions. I needed to come to terms with some things. And there's one notable time when I got out on my bike and was told by my partner to just go ride for, you know, ride all day, just go. And I was out for about 8 hours, and I used the time to really think and meditate. And the cool thing about that is that it's a very, you know, if you haven't ridden a bike, it's kind of a zen exercise because you got to be so hyper alert and aware of everything going on around you because your life depends on it. You have to, like, stay right on top of things. Your reaction time has to be sharp. You know, you've got to be really, really tuned, and that occupies that side of your brain that allows the other side, the intuitive side, to kind of break free and be. It's kind of like yoga. I'd never done yoga. You can look at my body and tell that I've never done yoga a day in my life, but I understand that's kind of what is going on, you know. There have been some times of great clarity when I've taken a purposeful ride and just gotten out and
I think that's
occupied
really
my senses with stuff so that my soul could be free to dream and imagine and get clear. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that, you know, that when I asked the question, I wasn't tied to it needing to be a daily practice or look a certain way. I mean, it's however we are drawn to taking care of ourselves, to stepping out of our routine, to feeding ourselves in a way that accesses different parts of ourselves. You know, all that in my mind is part of our practice. If you had to put your motto on a bumper sticker, what would it be? It's a hard one sometimes.
My motto on a bumper sticker.
Yeah. Your philosophy, your motto.
My philosophy, my motto. I'm going to get real vulnerable here, and all I ever wanted was to love and to be loved.
That's lovely. I love
well,
you.
And is it and that and that's the preface to that is as it turns out.
Because
I've looked for all these other things, but as it turns out, all I really ever wanted. So,
you know what, Steve? I wonder if that's not true. If all of us really got to the core of it, if that's not true for all of us.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's
beautiful. It could be.
So here's my last question for you. Is it milk chocolate or is it dark chocolate?
I got to say milk chocolate.
We're not friends anymore. I'm just kidding. Milk is delicious.
That's a tough one. There's no right answer to that one.
I know, but you know.
There's no right answer. I don't know.
Steve,
It depends on the mood. I'm going to be pondering that question
for a long time.
Yeah.
I would have taken you for a dark chocolate guy. I would just say that. But, you know, what do I know? Steve, I have loved this conversation. I have written down so many notes, so many ways. Your story has sparked in me a real connection to my own work. I know it has sparked and will spark in others who are listening to this idea that when our discomfort is not something we run away from, but it might be a sign that we're ready and able and find the courage to move into the next thing, even when it's not all laid out for us. And that you've highlighted the power of having support around that and trusting. And also sitting in the time where it's not super clear. And I love that you've been vulnerable and shared that with us. And I love you dearly, friend. Thank
you. Love you too.
This was great. It was
I knew
great.
It would be.
Yeah.
You're just one of my favorite people to talk to about big things.
Same here. Steve, thanks you. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on this podcast. Hey, everybody, like and subscribe. Like and subscribe.
Oh, yeah, like and subscribe.
And
I will put all the ways you connect with Steve in the show notes. Steve, tell us one, but say it out loud. What's the best way for folks to connect with you?
Lakelandsinstitute.com.
Okay, Lakelandsinstitute.com. It's in the show notes. And reach out to Steve. He's got a podcast. He's got tons of stuff. And get to know him. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast. And I sure hope that you're taking away something that you can begin to use today. Speaking of things you can use, I have lots of free things over at sherryhoneycutt.com. And the one I want to highlight in today's podcast is something I call Work Your Butt Off. And I spell it B-U-T. Let's get those butts worked off. And it is a 30-day program to help you get your butts off the couch. It's 30 videos. It's a 75-page workbook, I think. And it's free to help you begin to take deliberate action toward getting that thing or those things done. So that's what I've got for you. I would love to invite you over to sherryhoneycutt.com. Click under cool stuff and you'll find that. You'll also find the link in the show notes and in the description of this podcast. Y'all, I'm here to help you take action because action is how we begin to get new thoughts around our life. So go check it out. Get your free copy of this course that I've designed and go and design your best life. Until next time.